Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
There's something romantic about, you know, faraway California, talking about, you know, blonde-haired girls and suntans.
Very, very sad news in the world of music. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys has died at the age of 82. I'm sure everybody has heard the news. This, Patrick, is a real giant in popular music. And we will pay tribute over today and tomorrow, I believe, along with help from our listeners. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And I guess... before we get to the listener contributions, we should talk a little bit, give some of our thoughts about Brian Wilson. Do you want to go first, Patrick?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, a difficult week. It was, you know, Sly Stone, and then 2 days later we heard about Brian Wilson. And I think they both have things in common, one being their influence is traceable, you know, in many obvious ways, but also incalculable because of how far Brian's creativity and innovation went. He was a fascinating figure who is credited with, you know, popularizing and inventing many parts of surf music, yet he didn't really like to go to the beach or go surfing. You know, he was somebody who liked to, you know, in his early life, he would come home from school and listen to records by the Four Freshmen and try to recreate all the vocal parts, you know, just exactly right. He was most happy being inside of a studio or at a piano. And his life was, in many ways, you know, lived in a public way, even though he was a reclusive figure at times during his life. But it seems like we knew so much about him. You know, there were movies on TV about the Beach Boys family and his dad and how his was in the band with his brothers and his cousin. And, you know, he had this brother, Dennis, who was handsome and rugged in California, you know, down to the T. And yet Brian was sensitive and struggled with, you know, demons throughout his whole life, yet produced some of the most breathtaking, amazing music. The quote, I found a quote here from Van Dyke Parks, who, you know, eventually was collaborating with Brian when they went to make the Smile record that never really quite made it in its original incarnation. But Van Dyke Parks said, "Wilson made music as accessible as a cartoon, yet it rewarded repeated listening as much as a Bach composition." And I thought that was really true. You know, he pioneered the use of the studio as a compositional tool, and he brought in all these instruments that you didn't hear in pop music, you know, French horn and harpsichords and all these crazy things. I mean, just dogs barking even. He put that on a record, you know? So
right.
It's kind of amazing. And I mean, there was a period between March 1964 and July 1965 when the Beach Boys put out Shutdown, Beach Boys Volume 2, All Summer Long, The Beach Boys Today, and Summer Days and Summer Nights, all within not even a year's time, which is stunning. And each record, he took another leap forward. So I just, you know, it's hard to describe how impactful he was.
It is hard to describe. I think that's the toughest thing. And even leading up to the recording of this episode, it was like, what am I going to say? Like, I don't even know. Like, it's so hard to talk about this person. Building off what you just said, though, I mean, to me, one of the things as sort of a music geek, when you start to really explore all this, is like you start to realize, like, in some ways, maybe none of this should have even happened. Like, the Beach Boys, when they were formed, were essentially what we would now think of as like a boy band, you know?
Yeah.
The matching outfits, the kind of, you know, lightweight, fun party music, you know, the brothers and friends, you know, kind of collection. Driven by, you know, the father who was basically calling the shots, right? And you would think, if you were back at that era, you would think, oh, this is a fun little band that'll last a couple of years, two, three, 4 years, put out some fun singles, and then they'll be gone, right?
They'll grow up, and that urge will pass.
Right. The idea that they didn't just go away, but instead evolved into something much, much deeper and more meaningful, and kind of rewrote what pop music could be, and then had a legacy that makes them essentially Americana. I don't mean Americana in the music genre sense. I just mean like in the larger sense of like they're just part of the fabric of the United States of the, you know, late 20th century, right? It's amazing. It's just amazing. And it's not entirely, but largely because of Brian Wilson and his vision and his creativity and his abilities to push himself and try to express himself in new and different ways, right? And never be satisfied with what they were doing or what, you know, pop music could be. And certainly he was pushed by what he was hearing from other places, but
yes.
But what I find amazing about that is if you compare him to say like Phil Spector and George Martin as producers of that era, this guy was in the band, you know?
I know.
you know, like that just seemed unheard of at the time, right? So
exactly.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing. And always seemed like a good soul too, from what you could tell. So I think that's something as well. I'll just say personally, if I'm trying to remember and thinking of like my personal relationship with the Beach Boys music, you know, I think everybody heard it when they were kids.
Yeah.
Again, you know, it was just not only, you know, it was just, like I said, just part of the American soundtrack was Beach Boys. You didn't have to have grown up in that era. It was just around.
Mm-hmm.
You knew those songs, especially the early ones, the sort of pop hit songs. And then, you know, I probably went through a phase like everybody where it's like you listen to them when you're a little kid and it's fun music. Then you get a little older and you kind of become dismissive of the Beach Boys because it's, you know, square. It's not cool. All that. And then when you really start to get into music and then you learn about like the Pet Sounds era and all of that, then you start to explore that and you'd be like, whoa, there's a lot more going on here than I realized. And, you know, you just kind of go down quote unquote the rabbit hole and just become obsessive about it. Right?
Yeah.
I think like a lot of people, right? But I will say, and I'll also say too, one of the things I definitely appreciate about the Beach Boys too is that multi-generational appeal. Like it was music my parents liked and my, you know, aunts and uncles liked, and then I liked and my kids like, you know, it's like, it just sort of never leaves sort of like, I don't know. It's just like in our blood. It's like in our DNA. Right. Anyway. But I'll just say this real quickly, because I do think the early stuff, to some extent kind of gets overlooked a bit because you think it's like, oh, they were just playing like Chuck Berry songs and adding some harmonies and all of that. But there's some real depth in some of that earlier pre-Pet Sounds stuff that I just want to shout out real quickly. First off, I want to say that some of their hits, their early Beach Boys hits were pre-Beatles, which I think is important because there's sort of a feeling that between Elvis and the Beatles was kind of a dead time in American rock and roll.
Yes.
And the Beach Boys maybe to some extent were kind of keeping rock alive, which I think like that should be, you know, appreciated first off. But among the sort of Chuck Berry-esque stuff and everything, there's some more complex stuff here. And I just want to mention a few songs. One is, 1963 In My Room.
Man, I mean,
that's a real masterpiece of a song, right?
It is.
1964, Don't Worry Baby,
which
apparently Brian Wilson was influenced by Be My Baby, you know, in the Ronettes and Phil Spector, and wanted to write a song like that. And boy, did he ever. I mean, Don't Worry Baby,
it's
really an amazing song.
Oh,
Also 1964, when I grew up to be a man, I mean, who was writing stuff like that, right? And I don't even just mean like lyrics wise, but like, you know, that's a pretty complex little piece of music as well. You know, and there's other examples too. And then even on like some of the more poppy stuff, I've always really liked Help Me Rhonda. I think Help Me Rhonda is just an amazing little pop song. That was 1965. You know, and then, you know, you move a little bit further on and then you get into Pet Sounds, and everybody talks a lot about God Only Knows as the masterpiece, which of course it is, but that was on the same single as Wouldn't It Be Nice. That's not a bad song either. Wouldn't it be nice? You know? And then of course Good Vibrations, which I think everybody heard as a kid because it was a big hit song. That was a number one hit song, but the thing to me, the real revelation about Good Vibrations was, as much as you heard it, I don't know about you, but I remember hearing it like as a kid, it was just one of those Beach Boys songs, right? It was just, you know, put it in the pile with the other Beach Boys songs, and Good Vibrations is just a nice, fun little song, blah, 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 blah. And then I think you have to maybe be a little bit older where, at least for me, it was like when I started getting into the Pet Sound stuff and all of that, to be like listening to that song again and trying to hear it with fresh ears, like sit down and try to imagine like you've never heard this song before and listen to it. And then you go like, oh my God, I can't believe all the things that are happening in this song.
I know.
it's like that's the genius of his production talent right there. I think Good Vibrations, amazing.
It's absolutely, I think, the pinnacle. And like you said, when you sit and listen very closely to it, you can hear how it's like 9 to 10 different little sections that are just seamlessly sewn together. And it just, how he did it, I don't know. It's just incredible. It really is. And I'm glad you were naming those songs, because there's one I wanted to mention too. And it actually came out first as a B-side of California Girls, one of their signature songs. But it's the B-side is a song called Let 'Em Run Wild. And it's a song about, you know, a girl that the narrator wants to get close to, but he understands that the only way to get close to this girl is to let this guy she's dating continue in his philandering ways, and she'll eventually see that he's a bad person, you know, and he'll have an opening. And that's an incredibly complex thing to put into a pop song, for one thing. And then he even mentioned, Brian, that it's directly inspired by another one of his main influences, which is Burt Bacharach.
When I watched you walk with him, tears filled my eyes. And when I heard you talk with him, I couldn't stand his life. And now before he tries it, I hope you realize it. Let it run wild, he don't care. Let it run wild, he'll find out. Let it run wild, he don't care. Can't you know?
High falsetto thing, subtle. It's got subtle horn parts in it, vibraphone. You know, that's the other thing about this song and about a lot of the Beach Boys songs. Like, the Beach Boys were a great rock and roll band, but it wasn't like The Who, where the guitars were super loud and featured all the time. You know, it was all these other instruments. And I think that's another thing about the Beach Boys. It exposed people, myself included, to music that wasn't always, you know, needed to be turned up to 11, that had a soft, sensitive side. And that's, you know, that wasn't something you know, you really understood necessarily. Even the Beatles, the guitars were much more prominent all the time. And I'm also really glad you mentioned Phil Spector, because that was Brian's career model. And I found this one fact that I had to double check this, because I didn't think it possibly could be right, but apparently it is. By the end of the year 1963, Brian Wilson had written, arranged, or produced songs for 42 other acts outside of the Beach Boys. It's mind-blowing. He was constantly writing songs and helping produce, and you know, to the point where sometimes the other Beach Boys were like, you got to stop working with other people. You're supposed to be working with us, you know? Like, and that was his job. He just, like, was born to be, you know, a musician and a full-time producer and somebody who was totally immersed with it. And it burned him out, you know, at a very early age. Along with experimenting with drugs and alcohol at a time when a lot of people were doing that. But for somebody with Brian's mental health, you know, issues and pre-existing conditions, it certainly exasperated it in a terrible degree. So, and that's, you know, that's kind of the other thing about the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson. When you started to learn about them, like you were saying, historically, and you researched it and learned there was this album, there was this incredible mysterious myth about the Beach Boys. They made the greatest album that human ears would ever hear, but it never came out or never got made, you know? It was just this wild rumor, and that always fascinated me. In the intervening years, many of the mysteries have been unraveled and explained, but back then when you first learned about it, you're like, what is this? How could it possibly be? You know, it's just, well, it's incredible.
Unfortunately, well, fortunately, he found his home in the studio and he was able to step back from touring.
Yes.
Let the band go out and tour. Unlike the Beatles, who just, they all just said, like, we can't tour anymore.
Right.
Because we can't translate this music, you know, to our live show. And I think they just didn't find live performing as fulfilling anymore.
Yeah.
So they decided to be a studio act, but a little bit different here. Brian Wilson decided he needed to be in the studio all the time, mm-hmm. but they still had the band to be able to go out and tour,
right.
which also, by the way, provided them with a lot of revenue over the years, which, you know, allowed him to be in the studio all the time and do all of these things, mm-hmm. right? But anyway, so that was just a great arrangement for them. But unfortunately, his competitive spirit, I guess you call it, just got the best of him. And you know, and as he was like, you know, as the Beach Boys and the Beatles were trying to sort of one-up each other, I think Brian was like, I don't know if I can do it anymore, right?
Yeah.
And it just it consumed him. And and you know, he had his health, mental health struggles and so on, and we all know, and that was the thing too, growing up in our era, we heard a lot about the Brian Wilson who, like, you know, was in bed all the time and
right
stuff like that, the really kind of sad, really sad story of Brian Wilson. And happily he emerged from that after many years of struggle and resuscitated his career. And you know, the song Love and Mercy, he, you know, came out like the late 80s or something like that. So post, you know, a lot of those struggles. So, you know, he was able to do some interesting work later on as well. But man, again, I just go back to, I think of, he always just seemed like such a great, positive soul in this world.
Yeah.
And, even through all of that. And, if you believe in the idea of like, leave the world better than you found it, I think this is one of those people. That's
absolutely. Yeah. That's very well said. And it's a key point about the Beatles. I mean, you know, during those years when he was composing Good Vibrations and Pet Sounds, the Beatles and George Martin have said he was the one that pushed the Beatles. You know, it was because of Brian that challenged them. He was by far the most challenging for them. And we may not have ever had Sgt. Pepper if it wasn't for Brian Wilson. So that's something to think about, too.
Yeah. Amazing legacy. So anyway,
yeah.
We have a number of listeners who have sent in recordings where they talk about Brian Wilson, right?
Yes, we do. And in just a minute here, we're going to start off with Stephen Routledge. He sent in a nice voice note.
Oh,
and there's
very
a
nice.
Very special guest appearance in it, according to Stephen. So get ready for that.
All right. So you'll hear from the listeners today and then also tomorrow.
That's correct.
Hi, Jim and Patrick, interns, fellow listeners, Shadow, and of course, not forgetting the flat-dwelling rodents of New York. It's Stephen Routledge here calling in from Stirling with some thoughts on the passing of pop pioneer and musical great Brian Wilson. Certainly, I was very familiar with the music of the Beach Boys growing up, having heard a lot of the hits in the car as we were driving around as a child. And in a moment of great serendipity, I guess you could say, the person responsible for me hearing those Beach Boys hits as a child is actually visiting at the time that Brian Wilson died. So we've got a special guest with me today to have a, share his thoughts on Brian Wilson. And my dad is here with us to talk about that just now. So welcome to being on Rock in the Suburbs.
Thank you, Stephen.
And, yeah, I mean, I've always known that you've been a big Brian Wilson fan. So when did you first hear the Beach Boys music?
Well, it must have been back in the 60s. And imagine, you know, songs like Surfing Safari, Surfing USA, those sort of hits came into the British charts, and they were just so different. Yeah, they looked different because they were all dressed in a sort of summery clothes. And but the biggest thing for me was the incredible harmonies of that band. And the songs were snappy, they were short, you know, usually under 2 minutes, and yet they packed a huge amount in. And so I became interested in them. I was, you know, before we were married, I guess, that I started listening to them. Didn't have a lot of money to spend on buying lots of albums or that sort of thing. So there was such a thing called extended play EPs that ran at 45 revs per minute. So I did buy some of those with their biggest UK hits. They've always seemed to be quite popular in the UK. Maybe because there's something romantic about, you know, faraway California, talking about, you know, blonde-haired girls and suntans and cars.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess if you're growing up in a grey, wet and windy 1950s and 60s England, that the California sun is something quite exotic. In the same way that, you know, in reverse, when the Beatles and Stones went to America, it was like, well, what's this? This
is that's right. So, that's right.
And I believe you got to see the Beach Boys performing back in the 60s.
Yes, we did. That was when I was married to Pat, my wife. And I'm sure we came back from a holiday early to catch them. And I, you know, we were talking about it earlier. I think I said they were in the Palladium. I don't think it was. I think it was the Hammersmith Palais, which is a big sort of music venue in West London. And I was just blown away because, you know, you hear the records on radio, but to see them on stage actually reproducing that sound perfectly, in my opinion, was just you know, incredible. Especially when later I heard them do, or shortly I heard them do, "Good Vibrations." Mm-hmm. When did that come out?
That would have been a bit later. That was later into the 60s.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then they began to get a bit weird, like a lot of bands did, in my opinion. I think I bought their Smile LP, and I thought, oh, I don't know about that. It seemed to be going off the track that I enjoyed most.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone would, you know, almost everyone listening to this, and anyone who knows much about music would agree that actually the apex of what they produced was Pet Sounds. Widely considered to be one of the greatest albums ever made, full stop. And certainly that was, I mean, that's the only Beach Boys album that I actually own, because when I started getting into music, much like Revolver and Sgt. Pepper and Exile on Main Street, Dark Side of the Moon, there was these albums that were referred to in as like, you know, this is an album, if you like music, you have to, you can't consider yourself a fan of music if you haven't, if you don't have Pet Sounds.
That's right. I mean, that reminds me of when we went to see Brian Wilson and his then band, I forget what he called it, they were doing a tour again. And this time they did the whole of Pet Sounds. That's all they did. They just went through the whole lot. And again, whilst it was, you know, very impressive, it wasn't quite right. The harmonies for me. I mean, I just loved that those early harmonies, and it was Carl and Dennis were both dead by then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as we've talked about over the last couple of days, you know, I said about how the that blood harmony thing is something that is magic that you can't even the greatest harmonists can't get quite the same thing that you can get, which was what they had in those in those early recordings. I wish they all could be California. I wish they all could be California. I wish they all could be California girls. The West Coast has the sunshine and the girls all get so tan. I dig a fresh bikini on Hawaiian Isles, buy a palm tree in the sand. I've been all around this great big world and I see all kind of girls. Yeah, but I couldn't wait to get back in the States, back to the cutest girls in the world. I wish they all could be in California. I wish they all could be.
Brian was doing, you know, his solo albums, and I've got a few of those. I think the best one is for me is No Peer Pressure, you know, not spelt P-E-E-R, but the other peer. And there's some wonderful songs on it, and also some great harmonies. Somehow he's managed to bring together on the album, you know, voices and production that for me was almost, you know, that Pet Sounds level of stuff.
Well, I shouldn't have imagined, you know, any time that Brian Wilson was trying to get hold of musicians, you know, they're going to take his call, aren't they?
I imagine so.
He's like Paul McCartney brings up. I remember reading Steve Van Zandt's autobiography, and his manager contacted him and saying, would he be interested in performing on stage with Paul McCartney? And to which Steve Van Zandt, who, for your benefit, Dad, is the guitarist in an E Street Band, said to his manager, is Paul McCartney still a Beatle? In which case, why would I not want to perform with him on stage? He's like, you know, if Brian Wilson's finding out, oh, I'm working on a new album, can you play on it? He's like, well, you're still Brian Wilson, aren't you? So, he was had that level of respect for what he'd achieved. And I think part of what maybe led to his, you know, well-documented troubles through the 70s and 80s came from the fact that he was one guy on his own competing with basically three guys in the Beatles, and also, again, you know, competing at the, you know, the, a level that's the highest it's ever been.
Yeah, you know, and I remember when he stopped touring, you know, so I'm so pleased I did see him when it was just the Beach Boys and then later by himself with his a different band. But you could tell he wasn't really a showman. You know, some people, you know, perform, you know, like Mick Jagger, and they're really over the top. But he was never like that. Yeah. I don't think, you know, he was very much more of a sort of reserved,
a musician, not a performer.
And you could tell he wasn't totally comfortable performing in public, I don't think.
Yeah.
I may be wrong with that, but
I think that's probably a fair comment. I mean, it's just amazing because he did actually stop touring with the Beach Boys quite early.
Yes,
he did. And sent them out on tour while he stayed at home doing the making the music. So the fact that you got to see the Beach Boys in their original time with your actual Brian Wilson,
yes, I know,
is quite something special. Yeah. So,
but then I was just thinking about the guy we met when I came over to the States who'd interviewed Brian
Wilson. That's Craig Rosen for listeners.
And to speak to him, having him spoken to, that was one of the highlights of my visit.
I can remember you were stunned when I know, you know, Craig's a proper music journalist and he's interviewed loads of musicians. But when he said he'd interviewed Brian Wilson, I think you were, that's it, I can stop now. Nothing else that you've achieved the peak. So. Okay, well, we'll not ramble on too long because I'm sure there'll be plenty of other folks sending in their thoughts on Brian Wilson. If you had to choose just one Beach Boys song, what would be your favourite? I think I can probably guess what it is, but
well, there were so many. I mean, from an earlier stage, Do You Remember?
Mm-hmm.
which was a homage to rock and rollers. But I can't pick one out really, because there's so many that of different styles, you know. So you got me there.
Okay, I really can't. The one I would have thought you would have chosen, and the one that certainly I would choose, which I think is probably, I mean, plenty of people would say that Good Vibrations was probably the peak, but I would go...
No, I wouldn't say that.
I would go with God Only Knows.
Yeah.
Because I think it's on the pod, often we have submissions for what they call perfect pop, i.e. songs we think are unimprovable. And, you know, God Only Knows is unimprovable. There is no point anyone trying to cover it, because... Whatever you do, it won't be as good as that original. It's because it's it encapsulates everything about pop music in just beautiful harmony drenched form. You know,
one other thing, if I may mention, there was an issue with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and the master tapes of the Beach Boys that was released a few years ago. And I listened to that, and I heard things on that, which was obviously not live, but remastered, that I had never heard on the albums. Mm-hmm. You know, the quality of sound was incredible. I mean, back in the day when I had record players, they weren't hi-fi.
On a wind-up wax cylinder.
Not quite, but not far off. even after, you know, those original tapes had been produced, they've been managed to improve them and... Mm-hmm. And that's one of my favourite albums, where they put together the orchestral stuff with the harmonies, and it's amazing.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, thanks, Dad. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on Brian Wilson.
Sorry I missed.
Some of the listeners, and certainly those who got to meet you when we was out in DC, will appreciate hearing your voice on the pod again.
Oh, well, thank you.
And, we can just close that out and just say, rest in power, Brian Wilson.
Amen.
As the time goes by, and I wonder why, when I know the day is through, the summer was my favorite time, the night that I met you, somewhere in between these things I've seen, I have somehow
summer of 1977, I had just graduated high school and was bored on a Saturday night. I went to the local mall, and while looking in the music department of the Montgomery Wards, I discovered an 8-track named Endless Summer. And since that moment, Brian, Mike, Carl, Dennis, and Al have been part of my musical life. Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys were my first musical obsession. On our wedding day, when my best friend dropped Linda and I off at our car so we could leave for our honeymoon, I had Wouldn't It Be Nice queued up as the first song we would hear as we started our marriage. Their music has defined joy in my life. The Beach Boys have and always will be the soundtrack of summer to me. One of the last things Brian released was an album of him playing his songs on the piano. There was something very special about the simplicity of Brian at his piano, sharing his music without all the frills. There is not a year that goes by where I don't take time to put on headphones, lie down in the dark, and listen to Pet Sounds. The last time I saw Brian perform live was a couple years ago. He was opening for Chicago. He was not in good shape, and I knew that I would not have the chance to see him perform live again. When I was lucky enough to interview David Leaf, Brian's friend and biographer, on my podcast, he said that Brian continued to tour for three reasons. One, he loved hearing the band behind him play his music. If you were lucky enough to see them live during this era, you'll agree that they were an amazing backing band. Two, he loved hearing and feeling the love from the audience. Read any biography of Brian and the Boys, and you will understand the road he had traveled and the struggles he had in making music. So feeling that love was so appealing to him. And thirdly, he loved room service. So not a bad three reasons. Brian, I hope you are now reunited with Carl and Dennis and your wonderful love, Melinda. I pray that you are experiencing love and mercy. Thank you for all the music. Thank you for all the joy. This is Jesse Jackson from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Jim and Patrick. Phil Ingrassia from Vienna, Virginia here. Thanks for doing this special tribute podcast, and I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on the late Brian Wilson. One of Brian's last great series of songs is on That's Why God Made the Radio, the last studio album the Beach Boys did, which came out in 2012. The last three songs on that album, From There to Back Again, Pacific Coast Highway, and Summer's Gone, are truly outstanding tracks that Brian co-wrote with his later period co-writer Joe Thomas. To me, they're reminiscent of the last two songs on the Surf's Up album, Till I Die, and of course, Surf's Up itself. One of the great things about the Beach Boys is that they had so many cycles in their career. They had their early period, the Pet Sounds period, the period that produced Holland, and then, of course, after their big comeback in the mid-70s following the release of Endless Summer, they made some interesting music after that as well. So you can really dig into each period of the Beach Boys, and when you're sick of that, you can start all over again, just like Brian did so many times in his life. Anyway, thanks again for doing the podcast. Love and mercy, everybody.
Yesterday, old friends. time to go. I'm thinking maybe I just change.
They're just part of the fabric of the United States.